Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the plans to have the remains of John Dillinger exhumed. A Northwest Indiana man pleaded guilty to making threats to President Donald Trump. Governor Eric Holcomb's Teacher Compensation Commission will host public comment sessions across the state in August on improving teacher pay. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Eric Parrish, the Executive Vice President of MGT Consulting, and Lisa Rosenko, the Chief Operational and Financial Officer for the Gary Community School Corp. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. A Northwest Indiana man faces up to 23 years in prison after pleading guilty in the fatal shootings of his girlfriend's brother and mother. 37-year-old Robert Stewart pleaded guilty Monday to voluntary manslaughter and reckless homicide charges in the December 2017 killings. Prosecutors have agreed to dismiss murder charges as well as the firearm enhancement charges Stewart had also faced. The Times reports that if a Lake County judge accepts Stewart's plea at a September 12th hearing, the Merrillville man would face consecutive prison terms of 17 years and 6 years on the charges. Authorities say Stewart killed 27-year-old Ryan Halby and 55-year-old Candy Halby at the woman's Merrillville home during an argument over Stewart's discipline of his 7-year-old son. Stewart was arrested after police found him hiding in a nearby shed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
About 30 people gathered in Michigan City's Pullman Park Thursday night to protest a proposal by the Northern Indiana Public Service Company. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Anna Caroline Caruso reports NIPSCO plans to cut electric bill rates for its five large industrial customers and raise costs for residential consumers.
A group of Michigan City residents and city officials are protesting a proposed 7% rate hike from NIPSCO. The company says the money will be used to transition away from coal and toward cleaner sources. LaTanya Troutman is with the LaPorte County NAACP. She says if NIPSCO follows through with their plan, low-income customers will have to pull money from other areas of their budget to be able to pay their bill.
A lot of us, especially for me, the NIPSCO is almost equivalent to rent or mortgage. And so sometimes it becomes a choice, do I pay my NIPSCO bill or do I get food for my kids?
The protesters say the proposal is unfair because they will have to pick up the cost from wealthy corporations. NIPSCO says they need the industrial customers to continue to buy from them or all rates will go up more. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Anna Caroline Caruso.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Relatives of notorious 1930s gangster John Dillinger, who plan to have his remains exhumed, say they have evidence the body buried in an Indianapolis cemetery beneath a gravestone bearing his name may not be him, and FBI agents possibly killed someone else in 1934. The Indiana State Department of Health released affidavits signed by Mike Thompson and Carol Thompson Griffith, who say Dillinger was their uncle. In the documents, they say they're seeking to have, quote, a body purported to be John H. Dillinger exhumed from Crown Hill Cemetery for a forensic analysis and possible DNA testing. Both say in the affidavits supporting the request to have the body exhumed, as well as the reburial permit the state agency approved in July, that they have received, quote, evidence that demonstrates that the individual who was shot and killed at the Biograph Theater in Chicago on July 22, 1934, may not in fact have been my uncle, John H. Dillinger. In their affidavits, both say that evidence includes that the eye color of the man killed outside that theater didn't match Dillinger's eye color, and that his ears were shaped differently, that the fingerprints weren't a match, and that he had a heart condition. They say they want the body exhumed and subjected to a forensic analysis and possibly DNA testing, quote, in order to make a positive identification. Dan Silberman of A&E Networks said Tuesday that the planned exhumation will be covered as part of a documentary on Dillinger for the History Channel. The Indianapolis-born Dillinger was one of America's most notorious criminals. The FBI says Dillinger's gang killed 10 people as they pulled off a bloody string of bank robberies across the Midwest in the 1930s. Dillinger was never convicted of murder.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A Northwest Indiana man has pleaded guilty to making threats against President Donald Trump on Facebook. The Times reports 20-year-old Stefan Gonzalez entered the plea Tuesday with hopes that he'll get a more lenient sentence. Federal authorities have said Gonzalez posted on March 28th that he was, quote, standing outside the president's location with a bullet chambered to blow his head off. Trump had a rally that day in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Gonzalez lived in Hobart, about 145 miles southwest of Grand Rapids. He told the court that he made the threats from home while watching the rally live. Sentencing is expected in October. He was previously charged in Lake Superior Court with intimidation, but that charge was since dismissed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The governor's Teacher Compensation Commission will host public comment sessions across the state in August. The commission plans to host three sessions, one each in Indianapolis, Evansville, and Elkhart. Members from the commission and advisory council will listen to ideas and solutions from the public, as well as concerns focused on improving teacher pay in Indiana. The commission will provide a set of policy recommendations to the governor and lawmakers ahead of the 2020 legislative session. The first session will be hosted at the Ivy Tech Culinary and Conference Center in Indianapolis on Monday, August 19th at 7 p.m. The second is scheduled at the Central High School Auditorium in Evansville on Saturday, August 24th at 10 a.m. local time. The final input session is set for Monday, August 27th at the Concord Junior High Cafeteria in Elkhart at 7 p.m.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The American Cancer Society released a report Thursday on what states have done to reduce cancer deaths. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, Carter Barrett reports that the organization says Indiana lawmakers have fallen short.
The report covers a wide range of issues, including underage access to tanning beds, increasing cigarette taxes, and expanding Medicaid. American Cancer Society's Brian Hannon says Indiana falls short on most of these issues. He hopes this report will spark conversation at the State House on how to address Indiana's high cancer and smoking rates.
Unfortunately, this report is a bit of deja vu for us here in Indiana. We've had a few years running where we've not made progress on important health policy proposals. By perpetuating inaction, by ignoring these issues, they're not getting better and they're having consequences.
There is some promising news in Indiana. Starting today, the state will allow Hoosiers to get tobacco cessation medications straight from a pharmacist. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Carter Barrett.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A new report says the number of Indiana children who died because of abuse or neglect went up year over year. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports on the latest numbers.
The Department of Child Services reviews all child deaths where abuse or neglect was suspected, and in fiscal year 2017, that total was 65 Hoosier children. That's up from 59 the year before. The most common causes were drowning or a failure to provide safe sleeping arrangements. DCS reminds parents their child should sleep on a separate surface, not in the same bed as mom or dad, and the American Academy of Pediatricians says a child can drown in as little as 1 inch of water. Nearly half of the deaths in the report are classified as homicides. About 2 of every 5 were accidental. The causes of the others were either undetermined or suicide. DCS was involved in the lives of 1 out of every 5 children in the report. It was 1 in every 20 just 2 years ago. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Sports wagering will be legal in Indiana in just about a month. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports the Gaming Commission has approved 13 locations in the state where Hoosiers can bet on sporting events.
Most of the state's casinos have temporary licenses to provide sports wagering. Only Rising Star in southeast Indiana and the Gary Riverboats aren't on the list so far. There are also three off-track betting locations in Indianapolis, New Haven, and Clarksville where Hoosiers can place bets in person. The state's proposed rules for sports gaming lay out how operators will take bets and which sports Hoosiers can wager on, including most major college events. The Gaming Commission is expected to officially adopt the rules at its August 28th meeting. The proposed rules also include guidelines for online and mobile betting, though it's unclear whether operators will have those systems ready to go by September 1st. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
More kids in Indiana are hearing about guns while they're in school, but not because of school safety. It's part of a growing trend across the country where coaches are working with high schools to recruit more kids for trap shooting teams. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, fans of shooting sports say they want to expand to show more people a positive side of firearm use and keep gun range culture alive.
Allie Fulp and Levi Dotson live down the street from each other and compete all the time. They're in Levi's yard shooting at the clay targets Allie's dad sends whipping through the air.
I thought he already got it. I was like waiting.
The sound of gunfire isn't uncommon here. The two high schoolers have been target shooting for years. They're both figuring out where they want to go to college. Levi could go to one of the best marine biology schools in the country with his grades. But he and Allie have another focus beyond academics, a school with a trap shooting team.
One of the colleges that I've been looking at recently actually has a competitive shotgun team, which I thought would be really cool.
Fulp and Dotson are part of a high school-sanctioned clay target team. School-backed teams are a growing trend in Indiana and across the country. The Indiana High School Clay Target League started 3 years ago with one team. This year, there are 15. Shooting teams already exist in clubs like 4-H and Boy Scouts, but data shows gun owners tend to be older, white, and male. And Dotson and Fulp's coach for the LaPel High School trap team, John Beeman, says growth is how shooting sports will survive.
We want to expand that so it doesn't go away. So like the club we're in here now, you got a lot of senior members here.
And to do it, he and others like him are recruiting more kids in high schools. Beeman says to create a ripple effect.
So what I'm hoping happens is that this little nucleus of kids, you know, goes out and multiplies a little bit with their friends. And then that someone in that school takes the initiative, a parent or a coach or teacher, to say, hey, we want a league here in this school.
At practice, shooters take turns in different positions. When it's their turn to fire, they yell, pull. And a machine in the ground flings a clay target, also called a bird, across the sky. The shooter scores if they hit and break the target while it's flying through the air, and that's just the basic version. Brad Mendenhall directs the state's Scholastic Clay Target Program. He says the effort to draw in more kids is nationwide, and it's working.
It's the fastest growing sport we have in America, as we understand it in the high school systems.
Some people are hesitant about that growth. A league official says at least one school in Indiana backed out of starting a team after the Noblesville Middle School shooting last spring. But safety drives how coaches and officials talk about the sport. Mendenhall says for every young shooter, safety is the first and a constant conversation.
Ultimately, it's responsibility. I mean, they're very responsible kids. Last year, we fired 2.1 million rounds in Marengo, Ohio, without one incident.
And millions of one-time use rounds are expensive. The gun business makes money from every fired shot and shattered clay target. The National USA Clay Target League highlights the potential spending power of the students it reaches. It describes its target audience as young shooting sport enthusiasts ready to purchase. But before trap shooting kids become spenders, other groups help pay the bills. The nonprofit arm of the NRA, Friends of NRA, fundraised more than $1 million in Indiana last year for shooting sports. Support from the NRA nonprofit causes tension, too, but Beeman says it's not about politics, and he's happy to show people what it does for kids on his team.
Come out and shoot with us. Come to the club, come see the kids, interact with them, and then you tell me if this is a worthwhile endeavor or not.
And for one of the state's top sharpshooters, Allie Fulp, growing the sport is worth it, especially if it means recruiting more girls for some friendly competition.
The guys definitely underestimate the girls, definitely. I hope that they remember that we can still beat them. We can beat them hard.
And with her sights set on the Junior Olympics, she plans to. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
In a time when there are rising and continued tensions between police officers and the communities they serve, the town of Munster is taking part in a tradition that is designed to bring the two together in a positive way, National Night Out. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson recently spoke with James Grist, Dare Crime Prevention Officer for the Munster Police Department. Here's the conversation.
Tell me about what you have going in Munster, the National Night Out program, because a lot of communities have National Night Out. What makes yours a little different?
Well, we've been holding our National Night Out Against Crime celebration for 24 years now in our town, and it is truly a collaborative effort between our residents, our businesses, our community organizations, the police department, fire department, public works. Everybody works together to make it a successful event.
And what is the purpose of it?
The event is held to promote police and community partnerships through a variety of both fun and educational activities for all ages.
What relationships have you seen it improve?
Through the years that I've been involved with it, the past 16 years, we've seen a huge increase in the number of residents that are involved, the businesses that set up booths and tables along with community organizations. It's a great way for everybody to get to know each other, get to know their neighbors better. I've seen a lot more people get involved with safety programs through our police department and through our town just by being involved with the National Night Out. It's just a great way for the town to be able to get to know all of our public safety personnel up close. They can come up and talk to them and view all of our police cars and fire trucks and ambulances and safety equipment. They can see our canine. It's just a great way for them to see all of our activities, you know, participate in our activities in a fun and positive way while also getting to know our officers.
Do you think it has played a role in helping to mitigate crime, to reduce it or prevent it?
Definitely. Each year we're able to recruit a number of people for our Crime Watch program. A number of them step up to be block captains in their individual neighborhoods. And we have over 100 active neighborhood Crime Watch groups going on in Munster right now. And each year we're able to add more to that. And these are just dedicated residents that want to keep their neighborhood safe and get to know their neighbors. A number of them then go on to hold block parties and other special events where they invite the police department and the fire department. So I think it's important for all of our safety personnel to be actively involved with our neighborhoods and with our residents so that we can keep a strong line of communication and so that everything can be safer.
So National Night Out is like a conduit between the police and the community?
Definitely. Not only do we have crime prevention information that we pass out, and not only are we able to see all of our special equipment and all of our police cars and fire trucks and our canine and things such as that, but we also have a whole bunch of different fun things that people can do. Munster residents at night can go swimming for free, and then we also have kids' games and bounce houses. This year we're also going to have White Sox legend Ron Kittle, who played for the White Sox back in the 1980s and was the Rookie of the Year 1 year in 1983. He's going to be out to sign autographs and to meet and greet with the crowd We're going to have a magic show and barrel car train rides, costume characters, DJ music. And then we have almost 100 booth participants that are going to be there that night interacting with the crowd. We also take a time to honor our residents as well. We always pick four or five residents in our town that we'd like to present citizenship awards to. And those are residents who are active in either community organizations that are directed at making Munster, keeping Munster a great place to live, or who are active with our citizens groups, or who are active in their individual neighborhoods and trying to look out for their neighbors. So in addition to all of these different things, we're trying to provide a whole bunch of different fun things for kids to do. Last but not least, we have a great fireworks show. Crazy Kaplan's Fireworks provides us with a fireworks show to close out the evening each year, and we look forward to that.
This is, you said, August 6th?
Yep, our event is on Tuesday, August 6th. The main event is at the Munster Community Pool, and that starts at 5 o'clock. But if people would like to come out to the parade, we're going to have a parade from 4:30 to about 4:50 along Columbia Avenue in the 8600 to 8800 blocks of Columbia Avenue between the school administration building and Munster High School, where people can come and kind of cheer on the police cars and fire trucks and ambulances and some student groups, community organizations. It's just a great opportunity to get everybody excited for the event that begins at 5 o'clock.
Why is community involvement so important with police work?
I think it's really important for the community to know that they can contact us when they need help. We have always had strong community policing programs, whether it be DARE or Neighborhood Crime Watch or our Cops and Kids program where we take kids shopping during the holidays. We think it's really important for kids to grow up knowing that the police department is there for them whenever they are in trouble, or you know, they need assistance or they need advice or anything else like that, that the police department is there to support them. We also want the adults to know that whenever they have something suspicious going on in their neighborhood, we want them to be more apt to call the police. We want them to feel comfortable calling us and to know that we're there to help them.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add that maybe I haven't asked you about?
Well, we're going to have an Indiana Fallen Officers blood drive there that night. It starts at 3:30 before the event begins. It starts at 3:30 p.m. and it runs until 8:30 p.m. and it's on the grounds of the National Night Out. And it's going to be held in honor and memory of Indiana Fallen Officers. And people can just walk up, or they can call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcrossblood.org and enter the sponsor code MCPOOL. So it's MCPOOL, and they can register, pre-register their blood donation time. So we always hold that event as part of our National Night Out event each year.
Did Munster lose any officers this year?
During the past year, we had an officer who died of cancer.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Yeah. Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Eric Parrish of MGT Consulting and Lisa Rosinke of the Gary Community School Corp.
August of 17, when the emergency manager team took over Gary Community School, there's two important metrics that we're tracking almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
That is the deficit and the debt. The deficit is the amount of money we spend in excess of the revenue we collect. In August of 17, the deficit, the annual deficit, was $22 million. So the corporation was spending $26 million more than bringing in revenue. And the gap was filled with loans from the state. As of today, that deficit is less than $11 million, so a little less than half. And as I say, every time I say that, we're not celebrating the deficit of under $11 million, but we are on the right path, and it's certainly the right trajectory.
Yeah. Well, certainly, you've gotten off to a good start here, to be sure, compared to what it was even a year ago, I would imagine.
Yeah, a year ago, we were about $18 million in the deficit. So the last year has been very good as far as bringing that deficit down. In January of 18, we submitted to the Distress Unit Appeals Board DUAS a deficit reduction plan that was a 7-year plan to get us to a balanced budget and fiscal sustainability. We're updating that plan every 6 months, and I can say we're still on track to reach that fiscal sustainability by the end of 2020. That's if everything falls into place. There's some guardrails around that, some cushion built in, but we're on that path. Mm-hmm. The other key metric is the debt. The debt is accumulated borrowing. In August of 17, the debt, both short-term and long-term, was $104 million. June 30th of 2019, it is $90 million. What's really key to that is debt is broken down to short-term and long-term. Long-term is borrowing, which is part of the bond refund Lisa can talk about, and common school loans, which was keeping the school district afloat for quite a while. That is almost exactly what it was in June of 19 as it was in August of 17. It's about just over $1.5 million more. Mm-hmm. What's really key was short-term debt in August of 17 was $16.5 million. And June of 19, it's $1.5 million. And two big pieces why that's so significant. $8.5 million of that $16.5 million was the IRS obligation. That has been cleared. Lots of celebration around that. And that not only clears that obligation we settled, but also listed the liens on all of the properties that we own, and we're able to liquidate some of those properties. Mm-hmm. The other part of that is we owed Gary Community Schools was not a good business partner and had approximately 20 judgments or settlements against us in August of 17 for lack of payment. All of those, maybe less one or two, have been cleared, and those one or two are relatively small. It was in the millions that we owed, accumulated that we owed in past due payments. We wanted to be a good business partner. We wanted to be responsive. We wanted to be able to negotiate better terms. And we made a conscious effort to pay down that short-term debt, and that's reflected in the change from 16.5 to about a million.
Lisa, if you will, fill us in on the efforts that the Gary Community School Corporation has recently done in selling some of the refunding bonds. I guess about $4.6 million is what I understand. What were some of the thoughts when the bond sale was underway, and how this is going to help the impact on the overall school district's budget now?
The bonds were initially taken out in 2009. They were up for refunding in 2019. And the district had thought that based on projections, they would estimate about a $345,000 savings. As it turned out, when they took the bonds out to bid, it resulted in over a $500,000 savings. So that's $500,000 we'll save over 9.5 years. That will equate to just over $53,000 per year. We'll be saving less on the same debt. So we were really excited to see that when the bonds went out, we received a really good return. So the savings came in at about 9.2%. When the bonds were settled and sold, the school did very well out on the market, and that was based on the AA+ rating that the school achieved through the state intercept program. With the school district being able to capitalize on the state Indiana's intercept program, we were able to get a better rate. Our hope is next time we go out to refund a bond that we can establish a better rating for the district, because we are doing better, and our like Eric had said, we're improving our credit rating with all of the initiatives that are going on in the district.
let me ask both of you, since you both work so closely with the dollars and cents that the Gary Community School Corporation has to deal with, and not only the current expenses, and now with another academic year coming up here very soon from now, what you're looking to the future. How do you feel the improvements that have been made to the school district and maybe make everybody's peace of mind is a little more stable compared to what it was a few years ago?
Yeah, I'll start. That phrase, peace of mind, I think is perfect. August of 17, there was great instability around the district as how long will it continue. In accounting terms, a going concern, meaning there's risk that it won't be in operation. And that rippled through the entire organization, from staff to teachers to classrooms to parents. And that, I think, was impacted enrollment. We saw enrollment declines year over year. And morale, just the great unknown of the uncertainty. I feel and hear that the stability is real. The trajectory is real. We're starting to see students come back. We're noticing an uptick in enrollment. We had more teachers hired this year that came in that said, I want to be part of this turnaround. We have new building leaders, principals, and administrators in buildings that said the exact same thing that a couple of years ago. It was too big of a risk, but now we see you're on the right path and I want to be part of it. So I've seen it throughout the entire organization, not just in the fiscal side.
And I would tag on with that with Eric, is there isn't a feeling of excitement within the administration and the buildings and the staff. And so going forward, it's exciting to see what the district is doing.
That has to be a great way to get into the new school year coming up is for that everybody, teachers and support staff and the principals with the changes that have been made in the school district and all, to be able to go into a new year with more students, and you're hoping that even greater enrollment increases in the months and ahead, to be able to show the community and that this school district is far from dead. It's very much alive, and it's working very hard to deal with the problems of the past and to be able to look better to the future. Let me ask you, Eric, since you're with the MGT consulting team, the emergency management team, working with Dr. Marikas on a daily basis on this, do you folks, having come into all of this, feel confident in your own right?
Yes. Yeah. We have a number of metrics that we track either daily, weekly, or monthly. And that's not only fiscal, those are the easy ones. Academic, those are easy as well, but some are cultural and satisfaction, parents, students, teachers. We have seen all of those trending in the right direction, and there's a couple of things that we really put a stake in the ground. Enrollment will be one. The fiscal condition of the organization, because it was so perilous when we took over, is another. Community input, community engagement is another. And then academics, of course, is the other. Those two in the middle, community engagement. Clearly, we have more outreach that's deliberate, but we see more engagement coming back towards us as well. Especially in the last 6 months. That's a huge key indicator of progress and the confidence that we have that we're not just moving in the right direction, but we are going to get to where everybody wants to be, and that's a sustainable, healthy, functioning, performing school district. And enrollment will be the ultimate metric around that. Mm-hmm. That for years, for 10 years, Gary Community Schools was averaging a loss of about 500 students per year. It was just a straight decline. If you were to graph it, it'd be upper left-hand corner to lower right-hand corner. Mm-hmm. That leveled off last year. If our efforts pay off this year in the sense we have throughout the community, Gary Community Schools are back, are coming back, that will manifest itself in enrollment, and that will be one of the key indicators to say yes.
That's Eric Parrish. He's the Executive Vice President of MGT Consulting, which is the emergency management team. It's been asked to come in by the state to work with the Gary Community School Corporation to work out the issues that we've heard about today. And Lisa Rosenko is the Chief Financial Officer with the Gary Community School Corporation. Thank you both for being with us today to talk about the financial issues and look to the future and how things are on the way up for the Gary School Corporation.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.